Hello and welcome to the Dr. Denise Show. I'm Kathleen O'Toole. This Carve Out series is called On Staying Sane, and we are so glad you're here with us doing the journey of trying to stay sane. Dr. Denise, we sometimes say in an insane world, don't we?
Oh my goodness. It's like, I have to tell you, it's actually like a regular concept within seeing my patients. We talk about how Earth is like Armageddon right now. And people are like, oh, yeah. I mean, so I never imagined that that kind of language and just like everyone would feel so validated by saying that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate, thank you. I just wanted to give you a little thank you for last week. I took my family on spring break 2022. And so I was off for the week. So thank you for allowing that flexibility.
You're welcome. I did a real short and sweet show, just really sending love out to, you know, I think sometimes when we're in this world, it's such a rapid pace, like news comes at us, different situations. And I think it's really important for everyone to know that last week I covered just peace for Ukraine and peace for one humanity. So even when I'm doing different shows and different series, that's always the spirit. So I thought I would use that time just to, you know, give some love to the world. So I used your pause. I gave love to you on your lovely trip. Did you have a good time, by the way?
We did. So relaxing and kind of bonding as a family.
I love it. So Kathleen was off the grid. So everyone being off the grid is definitely part of staying sane. So good job, Kathleen.
So this week on Staying Sane, thank you, we are going to talk about empaths, sensory overload. Oh my. And this came out organically through Dr. Denise's life this past week. And she said, let's talk about it. And I said, awesome.
Yeah. So I think we're very fortunate. We're living at a time where the word empath, when I look at the pulse of consciousness, I look at different language, words, thoughts, and actions that are now part of more mainstream curriculum. But we have to sometimes look at how did that even happen? What is an empath? And how do I, as a Western medicine integrative psychiatrist that integrates Western, Eastern, and universal truths, what does an empath really mean? And I really like to elevate discussions by thanking pioneers in the field. I'm going to give my example of empathy in a minute, but I really want to thank Dr. Judith Orloff. Judith Orloff is a psychiatrist. She did her training at UCLA. She's
right up the road from you in Santa Monica, right?
Correct. And I have gone to a retreat of hers back in 2014. She actually has a book that I recommend to my patients called The Empath's Survival Guide. So I want to really, it's really important to have gratitude for those that are the pioneers in bringing different words, thoughts, and actions that are scientifically based. Sometimes when we hear words like empath, spiritual, some people's minds immediately go off and go, oh, that's just a word. But it's really important, how do we bridge those words and how do we translate that into helping us when we're identifying ourselves? So I just want to, we're going to go over some of the key things to look at what an empath is, but I am an empath, but I use it as an integrative tool. And an empath is someone who can actually really, really, really deeply feel. They're really deeply attuned to what other people around them are feeling emotionally and physically. And sometimes you can experience those sensations as though they're your own and you don't even need to utter a word. Now, for me, think about it. If you're an adult and child psychiatrist and your client's coming to you and you're not only hearing their words, they're giving their history, but I feel
feeling them.
Yes. Yes. And so I will tell you that at times it can be a bit much. I'm just going to be honest, but I use it and I have tools. So I think one of the goals for today would be, what does it look like when you start to feel feeling so much that it's overwhelming? And we can talk about that. And then also how it's actually, to me, it's a gift. I've learned how to use being an empath as a gift, but I also have to recharge a lot more.
So Dr. Judith Orloff defines it, being an empath, as we actually feel others' emotions, energy, and physical symptoms in our own bodies without the usual defenses that most people have. And that's just the way she writes it. But you kind of already explain. But to people who are still new to this concept, Dr. Denise, explain the difference of being an empath and having empathy. because well, it is different.
Wow, that's a really, okay, so that's a really, this is one situation that I think a lot of people get frustrated when there's like mental health or psychiatry or therapy or things that you can't measure as much as you can. Like if you and I were to go get our lab work done or get our blood pressure checked or know what our blood sugars are. So to me, the neurotypical neurodiversity and the word neurostyle come into play. That neurostyle is we all process and perceive things in our own unique way. I'll put the link to our show that we've done. But what I wanted to say is we can all have different feeling states. And then, you know, some people might be self-proclaimed empathy. We can have empathy without always having the intensity every single time. So the people, it's, how do I want to put this? You know, like how does someone decide that they're a master at journalism or an MD? Is it the hours they put in? It's the experiences they've had. So some people can go around and have their level of empathy. Like, let's say we had like a Yelp review, like a five star. I'm really feeling your feelings, sister, right? Or brother. So people can have empathy without always consistently taking on other people's feelings and emotions. So to me, it's a shades of gray and kind of a full of, you know, a really money question that you asked. I don't think there's an exact delineation, right? To me, it's more about the ability to actually have compassion for another person's feeling state or emotional state. But some of us feel it way more deeply than others. Right, so you can be
the usual defenses that most people have.
Correct. So to me, I would want to, because this is my intellectual scientific MD, like going, wow, is there a study on that? And then what are, like, I will tell you what I'd like to do since you just brought up more of a linear question. I want to honor, and we'll put the link into this because Judith Orloff, has this book called The Empath Survival Guide. So let me read you've got this too. Why don't I read the first six and you read the last five? How's that? Okay. I'll read them all. It doesn't matter. I just want to make sure that we're both. So
website up and I'm not sure.
Here's 11 signs that you're an empath. Oh, okay. Number one, you've been told you're moody. Number two, you've been known as the peacemaker among your friends and family. Number three, you're not one for big, loud, or busy public places. Number four, you feel physically ill when someone yells at or gets angry with you. Number five, you find watching violence or cruelty on TV unbearable. Number six,
people feel inclined to offload their problems onto you. Number seven, you have very strong intuition. And I have questions about that. Number eight, you feel super weird around fake people. Nine, you're drawn to holistic methods of healing. 10, you felt a deep connection to nature and animals, my daughter. 11, you need your time alone.
Yes. Yes. And so I'm going to put the link into this article, and I highly recommend Judith Orloff's book. I want to tell you, as a Western medicine doctor, and she is as well, we are multidimensional beings. So people can come to me with major depression, generalized anxiety, ADHD. And what's really been exciting for me, Kathleen, is that when I'm doing my initial kind of screening of, am I the right fit for someone to come into my practice? A lot of times when they've been having anxiety, their doctor or clinician or therapist has not added that level of discussion about also being an empath, and that there's actually tools when you are an empath that aren't just what the typical cognitive behavioral therapy for generalized anxiety, dialectical behavioral therapy for mindfulness. So there's different modalities of treatment in Western medicine. And now we're really fortunate. We are living at such an exciting time that we are bridging West and East and universal truths. So I love the thing that I love, and I'm planning on staying as an MD no matter how much my media presence grows, is that I get to keep integrating more of this and use my empathy skills, my ability to talk about this. And maybe we can give an example with changing the situation of how I actually help people when they are empaths to thrive.
Right. So it is difficult to be an empath because, you know, you wanted to talk about empaths / sensory overload, because they almost can go hand in hand, right? I mean,
well, two of my meetings were changed this week. I had mindful awareness. I looked at my schedule. And I looked at how many patients I had. And Saturday, I had two patient emergencies. Sunday, I need, for me as a doctor who is also a single mother, and I love my patients and I love being creative, I need to carve out time that's really peaceful. That's why I'm always in the pool, swimming, praying, meditating. But I take on feelings. And I, when I got up and we were supposed to have, you and I this week, we're supposed to have like a producer call and a catch up on all the good news. I had a mindful awareness. We always talk about the fundamentals of good mental, physical, and spiritual health, being awareness, self-love, and altruism. I had awareness, and I've been talking about self-care as the new cool, that I wanted to go in. I hadn't spoken to you in 10 days. I wanted to be more peppy. I wanted to be excited about your trip, and I wanted to have a nice outline for us. When I woke up, my son needed me. I was fatigued. I had a big, big patient day ahead, starting at, I think, at 11. So you were kind enough, and we've done this for each other. We've modeled that it's okay to be flexible because you and I are fortunate to work well together. So I had mindful awareness that I needed to do more rest time. I needed to drink fluids, have holistic health, and give myself a little bit of a break so that I could show up better. And I think that's part of on staying sane. How do we know our own neurostyle? And if we are an empath, I've got a bunch more empath hacks, but I just want to see how you relate to this and how this, you know, with your mind and you as a mother and both of us having children with high spidey senses or sensory awareness. And even that's a reframing, right? You're a mother, I'm a mother, and you have all of your experience looking at the news, looking at like, so how does this relate to you? When you hear the word empath and what we're discussing, what comes to mind for you?
Well, you know, those 11 things were very like, I mean, like, whoa. You know, when you take one of those little quizzes and you're like, well, I passed. I got everyone yes. Or did I fail?
Oh my God, you're so funny. Did you get 11 out of 11?
Pretty much.
Years. Yoo-hoo! Well, hey, lucky for us so that we're friends so we can have each other's back. I mean, I think the other thing too is when you're an empath, like, you got to take care of each other. So go ahead.
You know, so they do resonate with me. Number four of you feel physically ill when someone yells at or gets angry with you. I mean, that is me. I don't get told a lot that I'm moody anymore, but I might have been like more like, you know, in teenage years. But I mean, I know number six, people feel inclined to offload their problems onto you. That's a Dr. Denise thing. If you ever, you know,
yeah, and even
number seven, by the way, very strong intuition.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
And for me, you know, you need your alone time. I really need to quiet down. And sometimes it'll go for like, I need 2 or 3 days of quiet. And it could be like an outsider could say, oh, that's depression. But it's not. I just need to get still.
Well, you know, there's shades of gray. This is where I love it. When I'm working, when you ask the difference between an empath and having empathy, it's the same thing. Can someone have low-grade depression and be an empath? Yes. Do they need the medicine as the tool in the toolbox? Not necessarily. So I think what's happened is we have to appreciate that the linear language, if you take just one sentence of this show, or one broadcast on television, it can be misinterpreted. We have to have the context and the multidimensional understanding. So that's why this On Staying Sane series is fun, to give people tools. And then the words like neurostyle, when you say to someone, well, like, I have a term that I want to make sure everyone knows that you can use. You can tell someone you have an EO, an empath overload. I do that with one of my dear friends. She's now educated me on what her EO is. And I think you and I have done it too. So I know one of my friends, if she hears too many tragic things, like she can't hear, I had X amount of people that wanted to leave the planet, this earth. If I even say that, she feels all of their pain at once. And so I have ways of saying, oh, it's been a really intense week. I need my version of EO. And even before I go to her home, I go there ready. Let's talk about this. How do you know how you gave the example of 2 to 3 days? For me, I don't have a chance to get 2 to 3 days. because I go in and out of sessions of people being in crisis. And I also look at my emails. And even if people don't become my patients, the minute I read what's going on with them, I can tune in. I travel emotionally to the scene and what they're talking about. I had a client this week that had multiple traumas in the last few weeks. And I it's great. You can use your empathy for good, but you also then have to do self-care.
Can I dig, you know, for those of us who aren't, you might not have understood, when you said that you're an empath, but you use it as an integrative tool.
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense to you, but can you like dig in a little bit on that for some of us?
Okay. So I like to break things down kind of like when we're little kids and we're told if you're caught on fire, stop, drop and roll.
Drop and roll.
And like, you know me, I'm like awareness, self-love, altruism. So this is, these are tools that we can tell ourselves. So if you are someone that's highly sensory aware, see, to me, if you say the word sensory aware versus sensitive, there's a lot more, so there's still judgment on being sensitive. Sometimes people think that's good or not. So I like, oh, I'm very sensory aware. So how do I personally, because no two people's neurostyle are the same. So how I personally integrate my empathy and use it as an integrative tool. Okay. Let's say a patient calls me. I'm now seeing them. I'm doing the nice questions that doctors do in the assessment for adults. It's an hour for children, 2 hours, because I meet with their parents and then them alone. They give me the linear data. This, by the way, this can, this, these tips can be transferred if you are a teacher, if you are a mother, if you're a journalist, if you're an athlete, because when you get data and you're an empath of any kind in your respective field or at your age, when you get data that's emotionally loaded, so you're getting data that's emotionally loaded, and then based on your own unique neurostyle, you're going to feel the feelings of the words, thoughts, and actions differently. So once you have your own self-awareness, you can go into any conversation eyes wide open. So when I'm there listening to someone, I'm getting the data that I need to, but I've learned now this far in my career, over 20 years, to do more mindful pauses with my patients. Because like when someone in a 1 hour period of time or 2 hour period of time starts maybe sharing childhood trauma, loss, betrayal, incest, all these things, a lot of times doctors just sit there and go, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they just write down, mm-hmm. And then it's like, are you kidding me? Someone just talked about their childhood trauma and you're not going to do it. Like put your hand on your heart or just take a deep breath and hold space. So when I use it as an integrative.
In researching for the show, I heard of something called compassion fatigue. Is that, that compassion fatigue?
No, mine. Well, we can talk compassion fatigue in a minute because it's new. But so you're perfect. Thanks for asking. By the way, I love your curiosity, Kathleen. I just want to go like, oh, that's not even a ding, 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 ding. Kathleen's curious. Woo. Okay. CC, I love it. Okay. So we love getting data and being curious. So essentially I'm in the minute of getting the information. So I do a mindful pause and I look at someone and I actually ask them, now I know that we're here and I need to get the history, but we don't realize the power of talking about things that have happened that sometimes we can feel it as though it's happening again. Because my patient was starting to cry. And so, right. But maybe some people might have put it in such a compartment that their childhood trauma or their betrayal so much that they're at a point where it's in a compartment. So I integrate my empathy level with an action item of active listening, mindful pause, checking in. And then I give an integrative tool to give someone, I say to them, do you want to do a deeper dive on that now? Or have you done enough in your past therapy? Or do we want to work on that later? So I give people, I identify the actual event. I empathize with what happened. Then I pitch it back to them to have a sense of empowerment so they can cognitively reframe and they can learn how to be good healers of themselves. Because when you've had trauma of any type, sometimes it's like the floodgate just opens and you don't have a tool to set an appropriate boundary for great self-care. So is this a good example of how to use empathy and integrating it?
Yep. I have another big question and then I'm going to like fast fire some questions. Okay.
I love it.
The time we have.
Fire.
So here's my big question that you don't have to answer in a fast fire format. Why are okay, empaths, thank you. Why are empaths said to have a greater chance of the gift of intuition?
So the way I look at intuition is when we have that gut feeling where something just instantly drops into our awareness. I'm an intuitive, I have clear knowing, and it's gotten stronger. So if you are an empath and you know how to integrate your tools and do all your self-care around it, you can use the power of the moment of now. Let's say this again, the power of the moment of now to be in tune with your emotions, feelings, and actions. And when you're in that open space of awareness to take in all of the sensory data, you're more likely to have ideas, data drop into awareness. I have more to say, but I'm doing a pause, a mindful pause. When we create our own version, there's a term I heard called integratron when I was looking at some kind of East meets West. When you form your sacred spaces throughout your day and you are an empath, you can use the energy of your emotions. Let's say if you're having anxiety, anxiety is vibrating at a similar frequency to excitement. So if you're having a highly stressful day, I've learned how to use that energy, but I do mindful pauses. And my pool time is my sacred time. Even if I have to put my hair up in a thingy and just walk in the pool, that's what recharges me so I can stay in that space of open awareness. And at the same time, when you're an empath, if you want to be able to access more of your intuition, you need to have a lot of downtime. You know, Einstein, Steve Jobs, if you look, there's a lot there. Well, I'll find the article about water being a conduit for intuition and empathy. A lot of people get their aha moments in the shower, in the bath, in the pool, in the ocean.
Okay. Are you ready with the time we have left to do some fast fire?
Absolutely. By the way, thank you for your questions. They're awesome.
Oh, you're welcome.
Your investigative reporting is good.
Okay. So, I don't want to like limit you, but I want to make this fast fire. So I'm almost going to require like you to answer this in two sentences or less.
Okay.
Okay. Or three. I mean, we're flexible.
Just go for it. Go ahead.
We're loving.
I'm good.
tips for parents raising empaths.
Be open to listening to their sensory experience. Give them a chance to master their environment. Do you want an example?
Yeah.
So my son used to have high sensory concern, anxiety, and also trauma getting his hair cut. It used to actually hurt him. It used to take almost an hour. We had to go to this place called Snippets. And it was traumatic for me.
You had this too, Denise.
Right. So I had to... it was like I almost had to prep myself 2 days in advance, not schedule anything before or after, because when my son was experiencing this level of anxiety, fear, and also that it was hurting him, I needed to prepare myself as well as him to get ready for the appointment. And I had a routine where I gave him like a Toys R Us gift card. And just so you know, everyone, he is now almost 13 and he was able to get his nails cut and a haircut all within an hour, not cry and not have a sensory trauma. So, but he let me know with his words, actions, and feelings what he needed at every step of the way. So I hope that's a great example.
Absolutely. Okay. I lost my thought. Tips for navigating intimate relationships as an empath.
I think it's really important to let someone know that you need, I think learning to talk the language of the person you're flirting with or the gender or sex, whatever your gender flirt is. So you need to know your own languages of love, but how to let someone know early on. I think men like, and I don't want to be like gender specific, but men just like the bottom line. So the bottom line answer is let someone know you need your downtime. And that please don't take it personal. I need to regroup And then that can then naturally, of course, you want to do your natural play and flirting. You don't want to make it like a business contract. And here are my qualities about myself right away, right? You can just organically say, oh, if I've done a concert one weekend, the next weekend, oh my gosh, I'm more of a pajamas and a glass of wine and a movie. So you can do this in a way that's a gentle, gentle disclosures of what your needs are as an empath. And then they might say, wow, me too. Or, oh no, I need a concert every weekend.
So next one, tips for helping young people, young empaths, choose the right line of work.
Oh my God, this is the best question. Okay, so just this week, people are coming out of their bunkers from the pandemic. And a lot of people realize that they like seeing less people. And so I just had this where someone's realizing, oh my goodness, going back to a classroom with 20 to 30 people is not my neuro style. So we've even integrated that into, hey, what's the right school now? And then maybe someday I want to be in a work environment where I'm either my own boss or it's a smaller company, or we get the opportunity to be outside some of the time, have our offices spread apart. So people then can navigate not only what their superpowers are, whether it's math, physics, science, creativity, music, fitness, but they can then look at the appropriate environment for their avatar powers to shine.
Love it. You made it through friendly fast fire. Congratulations, Dr. Denise.
Can I just say something? Right when you called it fast fire, I was like, dun, dun, dun. She's trying to make it less stressful now. Dun, dun, dun. At first, I liked the adrenaline rush. Dun, dun, dun. We can pause and give examples. So I was even in the moment, like even analyzing the words fast fire. And that, like, if you even say fast fire to someone, or the word deadline, how does the word deadline feel for you, Kathleen?
No, we talked about this on a previous On Staying Sane. It's like the word dead, isn't it? Like if you don't make it, you're dead. Remember?
Yes. And that's why I brought it up, because I think that I'm just using tongue in cheek to remind all of us too, whether we're empaths or not, that our words, thoughts, and actions that we tell ourselves can like inspire us, or they can paralyze us. So we have to be our own best friends. That's a good place.
Right. But I knew my audience, right? Part of being an empath is knowing your audience. And then the big thing to me that just quickly that I wanted to make sure is like, empaths sometimes need to set boundaries. You know, other people naturally set pretty good boundaries. Those of us who tend to be empaths, those boundaries can be loosey-goosey. And do you want to just weigh in on that real quick?
Well, I just did a show. I don't know if you saw this. Maybe you're highly intuitive, but I just did a Diva Discussions with dating expert and image expert Kimmy Seltzer, and it was called Boundaries and Breadcrumbs. So I think personal boundaries in work, in our school, as children, and I think that I love giving examples. I think that always makes it more relatable. You know, I've taught my son when he was little, our bunny that we had did better when we just gave our bunny space. The bunny would come up to my son and want to hang out with him more. The same thing with my cats. Now, my dog was different. So even our pets can teach us about neurostyle. So I use that as a moment. I go, did you notice that when we give Bumbles space, that Bumbles is more likely to come be with you? And then I go, why don't we just call that privacy? So instead of my son telling me, get out of my room, now that he's going into his teen years, he goes, I need privacy. Or sometimes he even uses his hand, like it's the force, like he's using the force to tell me to get away. So I think that is a tool, a parental tool I've taught my son through having pets, that we all need our personal space. So when we teach our children that, and then we can teach our employees that too, or like even you on vacation, I noticed I didn't expect you to respond. You had your own boundaries of self-care, which I think are fantastic. So I think people also need to not take boundaries personal. Realize that we all need boundaries for the best life.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Denise. Who knew that Bumbles the bunny rabbit was going to teach us a little something today?
I know. Isn't that awesome? Thank you, Bumbles. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Kathleen, for asking great questions. Maybe we can always do part twos, threes, and fours. This is a very important topic.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.